Well, welcome everyone to Friends Church. Happy you're here this morning. If you're out in the lobby, come on in. We're happy you made it on a beautiful day like today. This is fantastic. If you're new this morning, welcome. Welcome to all of you. Hey, for those of you who have been coming out to our morning services for a while, perhaps in your mind you have a particular pattern that you expect when you come in on a Sunday morning at Friends Church. Come on, let's be honest. We're like cattle that follow the same path, right? Through that same gate, onto the trough, and then out. And probably you come in here and go, yeah, they're pretty predictable. We're going to do four songs, and then someone's going to get up and take an offering of some sort. They call it charitable giving. And then we'll do a coffee break, and then someone will come up and speak. How many have seen that and noticed that pattern more than once? Okay. Great. Just out of curiosity, how many enjoy kind of the predictable nature of that pattern? Okay. Let me just apologize to all of you. You know, it's because we're going to mix it up this morning. And here's the thing. We call this a spiritual gym. We refer to this as a spiritual gym. And if you've ever had a trainer, if you've ever worked in a gym with someone whose job is to see you grow toward your goals, whatever those goals are, you'll know that they will start you on a journey that is continually changing. You'll come in one day and expect to do certain exercises that you did last time. And they'll say, nope, we're not doing that today. We're trying something else. And you may not like that. You might go, I was kind of just getting used to this last routine. And it was just like kind of getting a little bit easier. And they're going, exactly. Here's the thing that physical trainers learn. And that is our brains and our bodies get really smart. They get more efficient at doing certain exercises a certain way. Almost so efficient that it hardly has to work. You start employing less muscles to do certain exercises. You get very, very good at doing certain things that actually what happens is your growth begins to plateau. It becomes robotic. And if you've ever gone to church for long lengths of time, you've probably watched robots in seats. They come in, they know the songs, they know the drill. They can almost do it like driving home sometimes at work. You ever wonder how you even got home? Because it was like, wow, my head was in a different place and I just somehow ended up at home. Same path every day, every week. Well, that's what we are trying to guard against. So this morning, you can thank me. Okay? You might not like just this feeling of, well, what are they going to do? Just relax. This is going to be a good experiment in growth. What you'll notice is every morning, typically at Friends Church, we have our own playlist of music that our house bands play. And it's music that is kind of unique to this place. There's not a lot of music that we play from outside sources. A lot of it is written in-house. And we play it in-house, and it's become a real honest reflection of our spiritual journeys. But don't be fooled. There is a lot of music out there that can be very true of our spiritual journeys. Even stuff that you hear on the radio, stuff that you hear in the shopping mall, maybe stuff you see on a music video or the soundtrack of a movie that is in all the theaters. There are themes in and around the music that you're listening to outside of this place that can have spiritual consequences. It sends messages that you'll embrace, that you'll use to your advantage or to your demise on your journey. This morning, I want to explore a song as kind of a thought experiment, and I hope you'll come with me. And so as I warned you that this is going to feel a little different this morning, I would just ask the question, same question that I'm asking myself, how open is my heart this morning as I enter the gym? How open is my heart to receive, to explore? How open am I to change, to seeing something different and new? So, with that little blurb on change management and what we hope to do here on a Sunday morning, I invite you, as I play this song, I want you to explore a theme or the themes that speak to you, that you hear in this song. It's a popular song on the radio by Imagine Dragons called Demons. So it's a song called Demons. How many have heard that before? Yeah, we've all heard it. We've heard it. Maybe it's on your playlist. Maybe you've just heard it in random places. You don't even know why you know it. You just have heard that song and you're going, geez, I didn't even know that song was about that. That's crazy. So what themes popped out to you? What did you see? What lines and lyrics seemed to illuminate themselves that got you thinking? When I listened to this song and I watched the lyrics of it, I heard someone talking to a friend, talking to someone they care deeply about. And it's almost like they're holding them with one arm away. They're saying, don't you get too close to me. There's something inside that I don't want you to see. I got some darkness inside of me. And if it gets too close, you know what? Chances are it's going to hurt you. So I'm going to hold you out there. I'm going to push you away. And trust me, it's not just me. It's all around. It's where there's this darkness in people. It's why you can't get too close. You got to hold them away. This is a mainstream song. It was on Billboard's Top 100. It stayed in the top 10 for weeks and weeks and weeks. Why? What is it about this song that people are going, oh, something about this tells me perhaps it's how it is. I see maybe even darkness in myself. I see something inside of me I don't like. And it's perhaps why I say sometimes the things I say. It's why I do some of the things I do, and I don't like it. It's my demons inside. All right. Let's just take everything I just said in that song, the things we were thinking about. Let's just put them over here for a second. Now I want to read you a poem. This poem was sent to me this week. I want you to listen to the words and see what pops out to you in this poem. It's a poem called There's a Hole in My Sidewalk. It says, I walk down the street. There's a deep hole in the sidewalk. I fall in. I'm lost. I'm helpless. It isn't my fault. And it takes forever to find a way out. It continues, I walk down the same street. There's a deep hole in the sidewalk. I pretend I don't see it. I fall in again. I can't believe I'm in the same place. I can't believe I'm in the same place, but it isn't my fault. It still takes me a long time to get out. I walk down the same street. There's a deep hole in the sidewalk. I see it there. I still fall in. It's a habit. My eyes are open, though. I know where I am. It is my fault. I get out immediately. I walk down the same street. There is a deep hole in the sidewalk. I walk around it. I walk down another street. You know, we just listened to a song about demons and our demons inside. And I read this poem. I think, for me, these two pieces, they speak of a similar journey. One of mistakes and shortcomings and failures. Behaviors, patterns, habits that we have that hurt others. That we regret. We wish was different. But the mindset of that first song says, no, it is because of darkness in me. There is some evil lying within, demons that are waiting. the other says, no, I fell in a hole. And I'm climbing out of the hole. And my journey looks like me eventually walking down another street. One says I'm sentenced to a darkness that holds people away. The other one says, no, one day I'm going to continue walking down different streets. Do you hear the difference there? I don't know how you see the mistakes and failures of your life. Even the situations that went wrong this week, perhaps your reaction to some news, some mistake of someone else, a harsh word perhaps, a reaction that you didn't like. Demon? Inner darkness? Some brokenness inside of you? Or a simple hole you fell in? I don't know what place that you most naturally come from. How you look at yourself in the mirror. How you look at your mistakes and failures. But this morning I invite you, perhaps to a fresh way of looking at things. I prefer number two. Last week I fell in a couple potholes. And they were familiar potholes. I knew those things. Found myself there. But my journey I'm committed to is walking down a different street. I hope and I invite you to consider something similar.
I like that. I find there's a certain spiritual skill that I wish I had, would like to have more of. And I'll get you there by way of a story. I love the Douglas Fir Trail. Does anyone know Edworthy Park? Doug Fir Trail in there? Fantastic running trail. And I used to run it 3-4 times a week, probably 100 times. And I was running it one day with my friend. We were running from the east to the west from the Mercedes dealership, running along, having a great time. And I could just feel the whole time we're having this conversation, my brain is kind of waiting for the thing that I need to say. Not need to say, want to say. You know that where you're kind of half listening and half paying attention, but really you're just waiting to say what you want to say? You've never experienced that, but let me just theoretically explain that to you. I wasn't in the moment, and as I come around this corner, there's this kind of little jog comes up here, and I was just about to say something to her as I ran full blast into a massive log that had fell over the thing, right in my forehead. Wa-boom! Next moment, I'm on the ground seeing stars, like, what the hell just happened? How many of us have lives where we're not really in the moment? I wasn't even, it's the Doug Fir Trail. It's one of the most beautiful trails in all of Calgary. I'm so far up in my head that I'm not even paying attention to where I'm running, never mind enjoying it. I've been on trails where I've run them, you know, 20, 30 times. I take my partner, she's like, within 5 minutes, look at that tree. And I'm going, that is an incredible tree. Have you not seen that before? No. I've run by it 30 times. I've never actually seen it. Our lives can often be, kind of like that poem said, unconscious. We're not present. And let's be honest, if we're going to talk about this moment, you guys can often walk in here on a Sunday morning, you know it's going to be four amazing songs, right? You plunk in here, sit down, your brain is like still stuck on the stupid parking spot you had to get four blocks away and screw that person who did that and... You know, what am I going to have for supper? And my friend, blah, blah, blah. You're not even here. And the music can draw you into this moment, right? We can kind of like suck you in. But what if we had the spiritual skill where we could get ourselves into these moments? There's a story of a guy named Moses. He's walking through the desert and he sees a bush on fire. I'm not from the desert, but they tell me that that's a pretty common thing to see. You know, drier than 10 dry things, a little lightning, boom. There's nothing for 10 miles around but this single bush. So it's not like it's going to start a fire, right? It's just a bush on fire. And he walks by, and as he's walking by, he notices something, because he goes, he's in the moment. And he notices that the fire is burning this bush, but it's not actually consuming the wood. Has anyone paid it that much attention to a fire that they could tell that it wasn't consuming the wood? Like, Moses has got some skills here, doesn't he? And he has this amazing connection with the divine after this. And he says, God was in this moment and I didn't even know it. So the exercise I want to put you guys through is, what if the divine is right here in this moment? What if there's something more here that our brains are still trying to figure out? Well, should I take that course in school? Or, ooh, should I take the job? Or my friend said that really horrible thing. All those things. You're missing the thing that's deeper underneath it. What if the idea is that there's something more here, and because of our distracted minds, we're not here. We're not going to experience it. There's this idea, there's this nerve that runs down behind your brain, down behind your heart, to your stomach. It's called the dumb vagal nerve. What a great name. Whoever named that one, like, that's an awesome name, right? What it does is does this. It seems to pay attention, or at least one of the things it does. It pays attention to how you breathe. If you breathe like this, that dumb vagal nerve says, holy crap, we're going to get eaten by a tiger. You have to find the tiger. And so your brain will start to spin and go, where's the tiger? Where's the tiger? There's a tiger. I know there's a tiger here. Where's the tiger? Right? Now, since there's no tiger, because we live in Calgary in 2019, your brain's making up what the tiger is. It's the worry, the anxiousness. Your brain's spinning, thinking of all the different things that really are not that useful, right? It's not like we're sitting here solving world peace and actually solving it. We're worried about world peace, right? We're freaking out about world peace, but we're not actually doing anything with it. That's what's going on. And it seems to be caused by how we breathe. So I want to try something that I think might bring you to this moment. And it's connected to the dumb vagal nerve. So we're going to try and trick it. We're going to try and explain to the dumb vagal nerve that there's no lions in the room. There's nothing wrong. There's no one scary. And you do it by breathing like a little baby does. Little baby, there's a little baby in the other room. His belly is like here when he's breathing. He's like, no shame, just like breathing, having a good time, right? We're all like trying to suck it in and like, what do you mean? Go. So here's what I want you to do. If you're open, if you're not open to it, just ignore me for the next 2 minutes. Have some quiet time. It's all good. If you're open to it, just close your eyes and breathe deep into your belly. Like, push it out, like they tell you to never do, like no proper person would do. Breathe into your lowest part of your belly. All we're doing is we're working with how our brains work and saying there's nothing scary here. We don't have to pay attention to anything else. We can just be in this moment. If this feels a little weird, it is a little weird. So you're feeling the right things. Deep breath, low as you can, deep into your belly. As you breathe out, just kind of feel the tension just kind of soften out of your shoulders and out of your arms. Amazing to watch your guys' energy just start to settle down. Just notice what's going on in your brain. Notice what's going on in your body. How does it feel? What if the divine is in this place and we're not even here? Take one more deep breath. If you're okay, just open your eyes. Can you feel the difference? How much of our life is spent distracted, paying attention to something else, freaking out about what's going on in our brains? And how much of life are we missing? What if the divine is in all the moments of our lives and we're not even there?
So I had coffee with a woman this week. We talked about a lot of different things. At one point in the conversation, she began telling me some of the changes that have occurred in her life since she started attending Friends Church just a little over a year ago. And she had this big beaming smile on her face. She began to describe how her boyfriend can't hardly recognize the way that she is in a certain way of her life. She was so excited. She began talking about this. I think in her mind, it's just progress. She's becoming something. Or she's realizing who she is or what's capable. And I have to admit, it was a pretty happy moment for me just as one of the leaders here. And, you know, at this time of the year, we begin looking ahead to the fall and the winter, our message plans, the themes that we're going to cover, the different ministry objectives throughout the church. You know, our strategic plan gets thrown out on the table and we start asking the questions, what are we doing? Like, why are we doing this? Why that series and not this? Why those activities? Why should we be spending treasured resources on these activities as a community and not those? And the message, the question that comes through all of this is just, why are we doing what we're doing? And it just takes a coffee like what I had with this woman this week as one of those powerful reminders. This, what we're doing here, is not about building some big organization. Just to be clear. We're not leading up to one day having our own building and building this big thing. No, what we're up to, the goal, the end game of everything we do around here, is us walking down different streets than we used to. No longer falling into the same potholes that we once did. Being able to see a way of life that is just better. And in the end, the way we live collectively changes our world. We remind ourselves again and again as pastors, we exist, this Friends Church thing exists to make your world and my world just a bit better. We want to become more and more a beneficial presence in this world. That is the end game in our minds. So I don't know even what your motivation was for showing up here at Friends Church one time. Walking in here, I don't know what your expectation was or what your hope, the end game was out of it all. But I'm just going to kind of pull back the curtains and show you what our end game is. Our end game is you walking down a different street that leaves people in your world looking at their lives, their impact with you, and going, wow, there is just something about this person that has made this pocket of this world better. They lift me. They challenge me. They inspire me to be a better version of what I was yesterday. That's our hope and prayer for you. Collectively, we just think the world, if this is working right, the world needs lots of Friends Church communities, lots of people like you who are striking a match and lighting up dark places. Walking in a room and leaving a taste in people's mouth where they're going, wow. Man, I love what that person has. what comes off of them. I love being exposed to that. Our prayer is that 1 year from now, you're looking around and you're going, man, I was a 25-watt bulber when I walked in here, but man, I think I'm giving off about 50, 40, 49, 50 watts right now. I just wanted to let you know that's our end game. Brighter, tastier, leave a mark in our world. That's our hope.
Good morning, everyone. I was just so excited when Vince and Jeff said, let's totally change it up this morning. I'm like, oh, and I'm speaking today. Thanks, guys. I really appreciate that. Let's just mix up everything. My name is Trevor Dreyer. I'm part of the teaching team here. If I were to sort of sum up my life in a couple quick sentences, I've been married for 23 years to my lovely wife, Yvonne, who's now just, she just went down. Of course, as soon as I pointed to her, she went down. My son, Nathaniel, is a 15-year-old, and he's at the back there. And this year, he can say he's taller than Dad. I think he's excited about that. I'm still coming to terms with that. And I really think you need to know this about me, because you might doubt it later. I am an optimist to the core. Remember that. I'm going to take you back just over 20 years. March 1998. It's spring skiing trip to Panorama. Book off the weekend. I'm going with 10 great friends, and we're going to stay in one big place. The only agenda item, really, go ski, have a blast. And I'm not excited to go at all. I can remember on the drive up being nervous. I'm just not comfortable with this trip. I wasn't skiing. I can ski, but I wasn't. And it wasn't the friends. I got together with the same group just last weekend. They're great. But this is a trip I just wasn't looking forward to. So the roads were great. And I remember pulling up to the mountains and there's snow everywhere. Like just everywhere. It's like a perfect skiing weekend. We have a few drinks that night. But everyone's cutting it down to a reasonable time, right? Because they're all excited to get up the next morning. And Saturday morning, people roll out of bed. It's like, woohoo! We're going skiing, they're scrambling, they're all excited. You know, Trevor, you sure you don't want to come? Like, come on, it'll be great. I mean, I'm sure we can get extra skis. And no, I'm good. And while they're off that day, they're having a blast on the slopes. I go down to the hot tub. Now, who goes to the hot tub at 11 a.m. on a perfect skiing day? No one. That was my plan. It was just the right place. While a group was out skiing, I'm in the hot tub by myself. And they came back late that afternoon, and of course they're all excited. I knew the first thing they were going to say. I said, let's go hit the hot tub. But I had a plan. I said, no. Nah, I already went today. Got enough hot water, thanks. What the heck's going on here? Why wasn't I excited to go? Why wasn't I skiing with friends? Why wouldn't I go into the hot tub with them? I was 309 pounds at the time. Oh, man. Just saying that. That's heavy. And being heavy, it was stopping me from having fun. Like, it really was. I was ashamed of how I looked. I felt stupid that I hadn't been able to take control of eating for God. Come on. I didn't like how clothing looked on me. I like being in less clothes in front of people, even less than that. I'm like, there's no way. That ski trip, though, it was a catalyst. Because I got tired of being tired. Of being heavy. And I batted around a lot of ideas over the next few months. I'm like, oh, I can do this. I can do this. How can I get out? How do I get back to someone who can have fun? How can I feel good about my body? And I realized I couldn't. I wasn't happening. I was thinking about it a lot, but nothing was happening. So a few months later, I go to sit down with a trainer at the gym. Now, I'm a big 309-pound guy, and I'm walking into the gym. Let me tell you something about gyms. Most people in gyms are not 309 pounds. They're in awesome shape, and I really stood out. And of course, this trainer is really excited to have me in there. I don't know what he's thinking, but he's like, yeah, well, I'll do this awesome stuff. And he's this like buff dude, you know, the guns are there. I'm like, son of a, yeah, I'm sure you're excited about it. And we're sitting there in his office. I'm on this chair. I said, okay, we're going to get up. I'm going to show you around. And I get up, and the chair comes with me. Oh, this can't get any worse. This can't get any worse. So you go show me around. I'm like, I don't want to do this. So 5 days a week at the gym, like, who wants to do that? But I didn't want to be 309 pounds anymore either. And so I did it with all those damn fit people. First day walking into gym, I'm like, I don't even know what this equipment's supposed to do. What the hell? Oh, man. 6 a.m. 1 hour of cardio. That was like a treadmill for me. 1 hour of upper body. That's some pretty light weights. And 1 hour, I was just kept doing that. And God, it was hard. And then I joined Weight Watchers. Now, Weight Watchers, it's a super supportive group. But guess who they have speaking a lot? People have already lost a ton of weight. Son of a... I got a ton of weight to lose. Like, I thank you for supporting me. I'm glad you did it, but that's not helping me right now. But I kept going. And then I did Atkins. And man, if you've ever done Atkins or keto or whatever it's called, hardcore restrictions on what you could and couldn't eat. And it's tough. Like, I gave up pizza and chips and cake. And I'm thinking to myself, is life really worth living without pizza, cake, and chips? Like, really? But I did it. And for 6 years, that was my life. March 1998, I'm 309 pounds. And when Nathaniel was born in 2004, 6 years later, I'm 211 pounds. That's 98 pounds lost. That's awesome. Thank you. Do you know, everybody notices. How much weight have you lost? Oh, thank you for noticing. Oh my goodness, 98 pounds. Thanks for asking. I hated clothing shopping at 309 pounds. You know what? It's really hell because nothing looks good on you. You can't shop in regular stores. I did have an account at Big and Tall. Like, that's like, oh my goodness, I'm not tall enough for this store. Clothing at 211 pounds. Oh my goodness, that's heaven. Everything kind of looks good. You're like, oh yeah, that's awesome. And we're at Sears one day. I totally remember this. And my wife is sort of passing clothing into me. And I'm in the change room, and she passes in some pants. Man, I like these. Yvonne, would you just be a dear? This size 38 is a little bit too big. Could you get this in a 36? Oh, yeah. That moment when all that hard work. Oh, what a feeling. Can you go into your own life for just a moment? Have you had a spot like that in your life? A time when you went through some terrible stuff and you got to amazing at the other end because you did the work. I know a very good friend, after years of dating, he finally convinced his wife to say yes, and it was work. And he's like, yeah, I can't believe this is awesome. Maybe it's something you did at work. Maybe you went for a master's, a PhD. Maybe you really put some time in and you get the promotion. And it's one of those ones where people are congratulating you and like, you earned this. And you're like, yeah, I did. It's awesome. Was it something physical? Like, did you lose a lot of weight? And everybody does notice, that's awesome. Did you finish a race that you really put long and hard hours of training into? Have you grabbed a moment like that in your life? Feels pretty good. That day in Sears where I said, do they have it in a smaller size? That's that moment. And isn't that where the story should end? That's where the movies typically end. If it's a Disney story and I say they get married and live happily, of course they do. It's just magic, right? You graduate from university, you get your dream job, and it's easy sailing after that, isn't it? You get into the best shape of your life, and then you don't have to do anything anymore. July 2019. I still work out. I run 3 days a week, hit the gym 3 days a week. I'm working. But I'm gaining. What's been happening? I can think back to this Caribbean cruise we're on with that same group of friends. See, I still like them. And this time I got to jump into the hot tub with them. But I can remember this meal, 4-course meal. And if you've ever been on a cruise ship, oh my goodness, the food is good. So we have a soup, a salad, a beautiful entree, and I'm stuffed. And the dessert menu comes out, and there's a fruit tray. That is the healthy choice, by the way. They even say healthy choice beside it. But the waiter comes out and say, this evening, we have a lava cake. Oh, it will melt in your mouth. And it comes with pistachio ice cream. Well, everybody around the table orders that. It comes to me. I'm like, well, lava cake for everybody. Then I guess let's just dig in. It's only one thing. I'm at home watching a movie. I've decided it didn't matter if the movie was good or bad. Often there's a bag of chips on my lap at the start. And I like chips. And the bag is empty by the time the movie's over. What am I going to eat today? Pizza. Pizza's always a good choice, by the way. Like, why not order the extra large? It's the best value, and then I have lunch, dinner, and breakfast. Aha. Uh-huh. I was only putting on 2.5 pounds a year. Now, 2.5 pounds where you're working out, it really isn't noticeable, not right away. But remember I started back in 2004 at 211? That means it's July 2019, 15 years. 249 pounds. That's what it means. Oh, man, what happened? I just told you, I stopped paying attention to diet. I threw it out the window. The lava cakes, the bag of chips, oh, the boxes of pizza. So much better than carrot fruits and salads, right? And what happens? 249. And clothing, it's lost its appeal. My running times are getting slower. It's getting frustrating. As I sit there and eat the cake, though. You know, for 15 years, I've kicked around a ton of strategies, but the upward trend in my weight has been just that, it's been upward. As I think about it, I wanted the work to be done. That's true, I wanted the work to be done. I just wanted the weight to stay off even after I stopped doing the hard work. I wanted to stop eating salads and veggies and continue eating pizza, and the weight was just supposed to stay off. Come on, as I say that out loud, how stupid does that sound? That's like ridiculous. It's the worst thing. It's crazy. When the work stops, the results don't stay. Of course they don't. I know that. Gosh, we know that. But you're not really free until all hope for magic is crushed. But you're not really free until all hope for magic is crushed. But you're not really free until all hope for magic is crushed. Where does that idea sit with you? Where does it sit? I know in my weight loss journey, I kicked around the hope for magic an awful lot. I wouldn't have called it magic. But the idea is the same. If I don't keep up the work, somehow I've accomplished... it'll even improve. What the heck? I can eat whatever I want, lose weight. That's magic thinking, isn't it? It would be great if we didn't have to do the work, if we didn't have to continue. And it's so many areas. Imagine for a second magic works. We'd all win the lottery. Oh, money problem solved. I probably now have lost you for the rest of the message. You're thinking how to spend the $10 million, right? Just like that. Once you got married, it would be just like Disney. It's happily ever after. It's like, oh, so nice. No debates about in-laws and family and children and oh, yeah, no. I'd go for one run and I'd stay healthy forever. You'd go to the gym one time and oh, you're done. Remember that language you haven't spoken 20 years? You walk in and my goodness, you're fluent again. Or remember, maybe you played an instrument in school and you just pick up the sax. That's what I did. And oh, we're playing like you did 30 years ago. And friends would be there at a moment's notice without you having to do anything. Oh, that'd be nice. It's magic. And it doesn't work. It doesn't. You know, there's a story from the Bible. For a podcast audience, I would say it's the story of the talents. And it's an interesting one. Maybe you've seen it. This is one that Jesus actually shared. I'm going to ask you, have you ever coached or trained anyone? Could be a child that you showed how to throw a baseball. Could be someone you mentored at work. Have you coached or trained anyone? I believe we've all done some coaching. You know the awesomest thing when you've coached someone? when they listen to you, they go do what they asked about, and they just take off. They thrive, and you're like, yeah, this is awesome. I love you. This couldn't be better. So this is a Bible story, but I'm going to update a little bit. You guys this morning are health gurus. Everybody comes to you for health questions. You know everything about health and how to get into shape. And that's awesome because you have three people coming up to you and they want to not just get in shape themselves. They want to be able to train other people how to do this. And you coach the heck out of them. You give them every piece of information you've got, teach them all the techniques. They soak it all up and everybody leaves excited. And you're like, yeah, go out and help. And so you check in a bit later. The first lady you coached, she says, yeah, I've taken on 10 clients and I've made a huge change in their life. And you're like, well, what'd you do? Oh, she said, I did some advertising. I went into a number of companies and did free fitness assessments. I've updated the pages. I've just been going. And it's so exciting. Like, I'm getting healthier. They're getting healthier. And you're like, hey, well done. And you're pumped because you saw someone follow your advice and get great results. And you're like, this is great. Like, and you know what? I think you're at a stage. I can give you some more information. So come on. Second gentleman walks in. He's got a smile. He said, yeah, I've taken on 10 clients or 5 clients. He said, how'd you do it? I rented a space, talked to everyone I know. I'm trying it all. And because of the hard work, man, he's helping people thrive. And you're just like, this is awesome. And you're like, come on, we can help. There's more we can do now. You've gotten to a stage. Let's go. Oh, man. That moment where you've watched someone take your advice and just go, it's just great. So you've got the energy up, you're pumped. The first two people, they went out and they rocked it. And then the third man walks in. And you're like, hey, how many clients have you trained? No one? Oh, like, why not? Well, they didn't just walk in. So I didn't have anyone to train. Did you advertise? No. Tell your friends or family? No. Colleagues? No. You doing the exercises anymore? No. And the energy just got sucked out of the building, didn't it? What was this third guy hoping for? Magic. This is the story that Jesus told. Magic wasn't going to get you anywhere. Third person in the story, when it's told in the Bible, they're hoping for magic. Our 21st century trainer, he's hoping for magic. Somehow it's all going to work out. But remember, we're not free until all hope for magic is crushed. Work, not magic. So when I start to work on nutrition, oh, good stuff happens. Surprise. Oh, I was talking to someone who had a great marriage. Turns out they go for counseling every 3 months. Oh. Talking to someone who tracks their spending every day, but has been doing it for years. Somehow they're able to save money. Oh. You know what? We get this idea that it works. I think even as I was telling my story, you knew kind of where it was going. But magic is powerful. There's a trap to magic, to magical thinking. Like, it shouldn't come up, and yet it does. Because I think there's something that's interesting. It looks kind of like magic on the surface. And I'm going to go to a really smart guy, Einstein. Whew. I know, if you can quote Einstein, it's a good morning. Compound interest, he says, is the 8th wonder of the world. He understands it, earns it. He who doesn't, pays it. Yeah, the E equals MC square guy, he just got giddy about compound interest all the time. What he's really saying is, in really simple terms, work builds on work. That's what he's saying. For me, I've been sharing this slide with clients this year, and I've been looking at it through the lens of money, and it works there. But you know, back in 1998, when I was 309 pounds, and I was going to the gym those first few months, it was all hard work. Everything felt tough. I didn't know anyone. I didn't know how the machines worked. I didn't fit in. But after a few months, something started to happen. Classic graph, right? Classic graph. It started to not get easier, but I discovered the elliptical, and that was fun, actually. Cardio was easier. And then someone showed me how to do free weights. It just started to take off. I was still doing the work, but was building on what I already did. It was pretty cool. You know, if I look at this through my marriage, if I do the dishes every day, at least put them away, and if I stop reading my book, right when my wife wants to talk to me, even when it's the best part, that's the toughest one. That's just terrible. It starts to build. It starts to build. If I eat healthy, it starts to build and starts to go this really upward trend. That's the power of work building on work. A little bit. First day, meh. Second, meh. First year, ooh. Fifth year. Nope. We get this curve. Ooh, that looks nice. And we see this story told again and again. The web developer, and they sell an app for $50 million. And you look at the app and you're like, I could have written that. $50 million, my goodness. Got friends and they always hold hands. They've been married over 25 years and they always hold hands. Oh, that's magic. Look at them. They're just meant for each other. You know that healthy friend? We all have one of those. I have many of them who seem to eat whatever they want and never put on weight. Magic. It looks like magic. Because I'm only looking at this part of their journey. And this looks like magic. The web company, we do a little bit of digging. It turns out they've done over 100 apps. Most of them flops. 10-year in business. They were just on the cusp of bankruptcy. And they've pushed this one hard. Oh, something was happening back here. That married couple, they do a date night every week, even when they're angry at each other. I'm like, how do you pull that off? They still sleep in a queen-size bed. I'm like, really? 25 years of marriage and you haven't learned that yet? Come on. But that looks like magic here at the end. It really isn't magic when we look at it. Oh, that healthy friend, this was funny. I was sharing the story with him. He got angry. He said, everybody thinks it's just easy. He said, do you know how many times I watch what I eat? I have a food app to track everything I eat. I'm like, oh, okay. It's not magic. It isn't. It's work plus work. But this story here looks really attractive. So we get suckered in there. And what about its opposite? This is interesting. Oh, I did bring a Kleenex, Vince. Thanks for the heads up. Because we're also hoping for magic at the start. I know I'm hoping for magic when I eat a bag of potato chips. So I start eating a bag of potato chips. It doesn't seem to have that much impact. No, that's right. The first bag doesn't. The second bag, the third bag, the fourth bag. I don't do the dishes every day. And every time my wife wants to talk, I keep reading. Maybe initially I can get away with that. But it's magic thinking. Because what's happening? I'm running it down. And again, maybe over the first month it doesn't look big. Get to the first year, fifth year. I'm 249 pounds. My wife and I aren't talking because I never pay attention. Like, oof, that's not magic either. It's me not doing the work. So where are you hoping for magic? Where in those areas of your life that you sort of have your fingers crossed and you're just saying, this is all going to work out? Magic. Where in our lives should we just switch it and say, I guess I'll have to do the work? I like this value we have at Friends Church because it says we recognize people's journeys are different. We don't all start at the same place. We're not supposed to look the same. And so I'm very comfortable with that up there saying, I know where I have to stop hoping for magic in my own life. It's nutrition. Oh. So I'm doing my best to crush hope for magic around weight loss. July 15th, I'm down 12 pounds from there, 237. Yay. I know, it's magic. No. I track everything I eat. Oh, Lord. I've had to cut out pizza and chips and cakes at least 6 out of 7 days. And I get on that damn scale once a week. And I'm just like, this is so annoying. There's no magic for weight control. Just hard work. And you know what? I have to keep going. I just got to keep going. What about you? This morning, I'm comfortable saying, I don't know where you're hoping for magic in your life. I don't know where you need to work in your life, but I bet you do. Is it a relationship? Like, is it a marriage where you say, yeah, we've got to do some stuff. We need a date night. We need some counseling. We need something. Is it health? Do you have to go sit in the gym and maybe be uncomfortable? Do you have to start doing something to get yourself healthier? Is it finance? Is it like, yeah, if I don't look at those visa statements, they're going to get better? That's not going to happen. Career, business? Do you have to go back to school? Do you have to take some courses? Like, what is it? I wish magic worked. It doesn't. So let me encourage you to go out there and do the work and just skip the whole magic part. Magic doesn't solve anything. Work does. Work does. Have a great morning.